This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia? Michael? What's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch, claw, up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
I can't believe it.
Let's open up that rave line! Woohoo!
Oh, I can't believe USD has hired Lincoln Riley. Oh, yeah!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rain of Troy Radio, episode 480, coming to you on Monday, April 3rd. We're going to react to USC's huge signing of Deuce Robinson, the five-star tight end, talk about spring camp, blue bloods in college football, and so much more. As always, feel free to follow us on social media. We're Rain of Troy on Twitter and Facebook. You can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Our email address is rainoftroyfansetta.com, and I'm your host, Michael Castillo, joining along with my co-host here in the Rain of Troy studio in Los Angeles, Alicia Deratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We are back with a big one. I think a five-star one, I would say.
Yeah, it's definitely a five-star podcast. That's what our reviewers think, and we only hope to be worthy of the five-star tight ends that come into our lives.
Yeah, exactly. As always, you can leave us a review over on Apple Podcasts. Helps us grow the show, and you can join us live every Monday like we are right now, 5 p.m. Pacific, over on YouTube, as well as joining us in our YouTube membership where you get members-only content. Like the video that we posted last week, which talks about some of the viral worthy moments and tweets of the month of March. And we talked about things like, what did we talk about? Andrew Voorhees. We talked about Lincoln Riley and ranking the Pac-12 coaches. We also talked about potential new uniforms like these.
We discussed, yeah, the fancy little graphic that you see there is what is available over on the YouTubes to our premium members.
Go check that out over on YouTube. If you're not listening currently on YouTube, go over there and check us out and subscribe, help grow the channel and become a member join the Rot Squad join the discussion over on Discord as well. But Alicia, there's a lot to talk about in this episode. So let's get right to the news. All right. We knew that Deuce Robinson needed to make a decision or wanted to make a decision by the beginning of April. He has made it. He made it clear on Friday that he is signing with USC over Georgia. The Trojans announced him. It's all official. He is signed on the dotted line. The 6'6", 225-pound tight end out of Pinnacle High in Phoenix is a Trojan. He's the 17th. Overall recruit in the 24/7 sports composite list for the 2023 class, the consensus number one tight end in America. And here's one for you. He's the number two tight end in the history of USC recruiting, basically this century, since the recruiting scene began online in the early 2000s, the number two ranked tight end in terms of as a recruit coming out of high school, when we were putting together the rundown, I was asking you, Alicia, if you knew number one. You guessed it right. I think it was your second guess, but you got it. For you at home or joining us in the chat, any guesses on who number one is?
I can say that I was able to guess this because I, an aficionado of tight ends, was very, very, very excited about this player and about the future for this player. And, you know, it's interesting looking at sort of the history of USC highly rated tight end recruits. It's a little bit of a mixed bag.
a little bit. By the way, it is fitting that Deuce Robinson is number two.
Yes,
Deuce. On that list, because his name is Deuce, of course. No, number one is Blake Ailes, the number one ranked recruit of all time to sign with the Trojans as a tight end. Tim in the chat says Fred Davis. It's not Fred Davis. Fred Davis signed as a wide receiver.
Yeah.
For the Trojans back in 2004. So
sort of fitting, given what he was able to accomplish as a tight end. But it is kind of funny when I think of Fred Davis, when I think of like highlights and stuff, like I see very much a tight end body. Like it's
he was a big dude.
It's wild to think that like he came in as a wide receiver. And you know, that's not a transition that happens, you know, pretty regularly around college football. But I just like, I don't think of him as a wide receiver body at all. Like he was all tight end.
Yeah, I remember when he signed at SC and that summer going into the 2004 season, like it was him and Dwayne Jarrett were two of the big receivers in that class. And which one was going to step up as a freshman? And it was Dwayne Jarrett. Dwayne Jarrett was the wide receiver. And then eventually Fred moved to tight ends. You might remember this little nugget. Fred Davis was the wide receiver who played quarterback ahead of the 2006 Rose Bowl to mimic Vince Young.
Yeah,
more you know.
No, I mean, it was.
I'm not sure it helped. I'm not sure it helped, but
maybe it wasn't fast enough. I don't know.
I don't know if there was anyone. Anyways, the rest of the top five. Recruits coming out of high school for tight ends for the Trojans. Number three, Xavier Grimble. Number four, the one I would never would have gotten was Chris Barrett, 2004 class as well. And then Alex Holmes is number five.
Yeah, I mean, and like that's why I said, like of that five, if you obviously exclude Deuce Robinson because we don't know yet, but Alex Holmes is really the one who panned out the most. I think Xavier Grimble was able to play and it was able to contribute, just had injuries. I feel like every exciting tight end that USC has brought in the past decade has just been dealing with injuries the entire time. I mean, just think of like Jude Wolf and Ethan Ray and all the excitement about them. Josh Fallow dealt with a lot of injuries throughout his career. Like it just feels like everybody, has been knocked about as injured, so hopefully the injury bug doesn't strike Deuce Robinson. But it's like you said, the number two tight end that USC's ever brought in terms of a recruiting ranking, and we do want to acknowledge USC in the graphic that they announced his signing. They have him listed at wide receiver. But I think what you always say about tight ends in this offense, like it's just an
they're
inside
sort
receiver.
Of interchangeable, right? Yeah. And the other thing is, like, you know, looking at the press release that SC put out, they say All-American tight end. Tight end is written all over it, so it is flexible back and forth, and it all begs the question or leads to the question. What will we expect from Deuce Robinson in year one? We've talked about it last week on the podcast. This is an interesting time for USC's tight ends, not only in this offense, the Lincoln Riley offense, but this is a group that is sort of, you know, in flux, not much depth there. There's Lake McCree, there's Jude Wolf. Epps is into the transfer portal. In comes Robinson. We know that there's going to be Cade Eldridge is an athlete who's going to end up playing tight end. Walker, that I can never remember his last name.
Walker Lyons?
Walker Lyons is not coming this year. He's coming next year. So kind of an interesting period for the tight ends. But what does that mean for Deuce Robinson in year one? What do you expect of him? We have a chat or a poll in the chat currently going, and 62% of our listeners right now say that Deuce Robinson will have between 26 and 50 catches. Alicia, what say you?
I think it would be extremely exciting if Deuce Robinson was able to do something the way that Drake London did in 2019, which I think would be very fitting, because there's a sort of back and forth in the chat right now about the tight end wide receiver of it all and whether or not he will be used as a tight end or a wide receiver. And I think it's pretty clear that USC isn't bringing Deuce Robinson in to block. They're bringing him in to catch the football.
Right. Yeah.
And one of the things we talked about in 2019 with Drake London is that he was essentially serving the tight end role in that offense. This is why people were complaining a lot about, like, USC doesn't use the tight end enough. And I would sit back and say, well, USC uses Drake London though. So, like,
Right. That's
what you want. You want what you're getting out of Drake London.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it's really just the inside receiver. It's an inside, a large bodied inside receiver.
Yeah.
That you can sort of expect here.
You sound like you're talking about planes, wide bodied, narrow bodied.
Yeah. But what Drake London did in 2019, 39 catches, 567 yards, extremely effective in that season, despite there being very, very good receivers as well. You know, you have Michael Pittman, you have Amon-Ra St. Brown, you have Tyler Vaughns. So it's not like he was a tight end. It's not like he was an inside receiver who was getting a lot of run because there wasn't anybody else there to do it. It was because he demanded that kind of production, and he produced that way. And he took advantage of the attention on opposing defenses, having to pay attention to people like Michael Pittman and Amon-Ra St. Brown and Tyler Vaughns. So is that out of the question for Deuce Robinson to sort of replicate what Drake London did with 500 yards? I don't think it's out of the question, even though it still looks like a crowded receiver situation. It still looks like we don't know where you're going to have room to feed Dorian Singer and you know, Brendan Rice and Taj Washington, and, you know, take into account
Zach Branch
who's coming in and apparently lighting up in spring camp. So there's a lot of guys who are going to be out there trying to eat. Not to mention that you already have somebody like Lake McCree, who is we have seen on a college football field making very good catches and being warranted of having targets. So I think it would be very, very exciting if that's what Deuce Robinson does. Is it what I'm expecting from Deuce Robinson? No, because I never try to put that much expectation on a true freshman.
At the
position that he'll be playing, which I'm just going to say tight end, but what we mean is inside receiver, is potentially always room for there to be injuries. There's always room for there to be shakeups in the lineup and all of that kind of stuff. So maybe he does just carve out a role immediately. But I think if you're looking at it and you get him 20 catches, you got to be really satisfied, I think, for year one.
Yeah, I think that, you know, looking back historically to sort of lay the groundwork here for where you can start with expectations. Drake, you mentioned Drake London as an inside receiver might be the best direct USC comparison, because freshman tight ends at SC, you go back to 2011, redshirt freshmen, Randall Telfer and Xavier Grimble, 26 and 15 catches for Telfer and Grimble respectively, 273 yards and 144 yards, and each had 5 touchdowns. They were huge weapons for the Trojans inside the red zone. And I think that could be an option for what we see with Deuce Robinson, because you can compare him maybe to Mark Andrews. You look at Oklahoma 2015 as a, again, redshirt freshman, in the OU offense. 2015, the first year that Lincoln Riley was the offensive coordinator at OU. 19 catches, 318 yards, and 7 touchdowns. That's kind of in line with what I sort of expect to see from Deuce Robinson, where I think he is going to be potentially a very dangerous weapon, but maybe not extremely productive when it comes to catches. Maybe productive in terms of impact, predominantly in the red zone and stuff like that. But in terms of catches, I don't necessarily know that that's what you're going to see, because look back at last season. SC had 7 different receivers with 20 or more catches. They had 11 guys who had 15 or more. That is insane. 11 dudes had 15 or more catches. Compare that back to like 2012, the infamous 2012 season in SC. It was Lee and Woods who combined for almost 200 catches, and the next guy was Xavier Grimble with 29, and he was the only person with more than 20. So, like, this is going to be a completely different kind of distribution, to where I don't know that a lot of these things are directly comparable. I think that the other guy to sort of mention here is Daniel Minor-Bebe.
Hey, babe, babe. Hey, babe, babe. Hey, babe, babe.
Yeah, we got to bring that one back. Strictly because in 2016, everyone talked about how much of an impact he had, right? You've talked about it, that, like, that was one of the, outside of Fred Davis, Minor-Bebe in 2016 was one of the best tight end, USC tight ends you've seen. You've said that before, right?
Yeah.
Dude had 17 catches, 250 yards, and 4 touchdowns. So, like, it's not like he was extremely productive. He was impactful. And that's sort of what I expect from Deuce Robinson in year one. Not a lot of production, but impact.
I think it's, if you're sort of looking at what the job that USC has to do with the pass catchers this year, I almost look at last year's charts and it kind of comes together really nicely. Jordan Addison is out, but Taj Washington, Mario Williams, Brandon Rice are all back. You plug in Dorian Singer, who we expect to be one of USC's top two receivers. If not one, then you expect to be number two. Mm-hmm. Then what's the other name you have to replace? You have to replace Kyle Ford, which sort of fittingly is the what you're replacing in terms of Kyle Ford. I mean, half of the time we looked at Kyle Ford and said he could be a tight end. So
20 catches, 365, and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah. So if that's what you're replacing, if this is your Kyle Ford replacement, then I think you're feeling pretty good. And 20 catches, 365 yards, and 2 touchdowns would be pretty good production for a freshman who has so much competition that he's going up against here. In terms of just sort of year one productivity. So I think that's got to be that's got to be the angle. You got to sort of plug him in as your Kyle Ford, not just in and that sort of fits, because Kyle Ford was not somebody who USC targeted regularly. Like, it didn't feel like they went out of their way to make sure that Kyle Ford got the ball. Kyle Ford got the ball because he popped up in big moments for USC. He made critical first down receptions.
It's the same way with Michael Jackson III.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. If that's sort of your role as Deuce Robinson, then I think you feel pretty good about it. But it really does come down to he's not having the advantage of spring ball. So he's going to come in the fall. And there are other guys who have had the advantage of spring ball who have a leg up, if not multiple years on him in the program. So it's not going to be easy for him to just walk in and immediately command that kind of attention. But when you look at what he's able to do on a football field, and just in terms of his size, which is very, very difficult to deal with, his athleticism and just receiving talent in general, it does feel like he should be on the field as a freshman. He reminds me in a way, and this comparison is kind of weird, but like in the sense that you just looked at Relique Brown and it was like, he should be on the field. I know that he's a freshman. I know that he's still got a lot of stuff to work out, a lot of things to learn, a lot of things to pick up. But when you have that kind of unique, when you bring something unique to the table, whether it's Relique Brown's speed or Deuce Robinson's size, you gotta make use of it. And I think that I think that USC fans can trust Lincoln Riley understands that and will do that. And we'll make sure that that Deuce Robinson, assuming he's healthy, assuming he's up on the playbook, assuming his grades are in order, assuming all of these things that you would hope to expect of a freshman coming in, that if he checks those boxes, he will be on the field in some way, that they will find a way to get him involved. And I think that's why I'm super excited, because the coaches aren't going to waste a talent like Deuce Robinson if he comes to the table and is able to do all the things that he needs to get done to earn the trust of the coaches in that sense. But I think the excitement and enthusiasm of the coaches to use a player like him has got to be through the roof.
Yeah, I would think so. I you know, you just look at how excited Lincoln Riley is about him. He's excited about, you know, everyone who's talked about him is, and you just go watch his highlights. Like he brings something to the table that SC doesn't have right now, which, to your point about Relique Brown brought something that SC didn't have at the time, right? Yeah. So that's the key. That's the key to standing out when you have so many different dudes and somebody's going to be unhappy with the number of catches that they get just because there's so many guys to feed that, stand out, find a way to stand out, find a way to do something just slightly a little bit different. Ron in LA, Lower Alabama, says, is Deuce on campus now or will he start in the summer? He'll be here in the summer. He signed with SC just last week, so which means he wasn't enrolled in the spring semester. So he'll probably get enrolled in the summer semester and then join the Trojans then in May.
Yeah, and
in summer workouts.
And the plan for the record, the plan is for him to see where he ends up in the MLB draft and to enroll at USC with the intention of playing football while also being signed by an MLB team. And there's precedent for that in college football, but it is something to think about over the summer. A complication for him is just making sure that all his, you know, stuff is in order on the MLB side of things.
Yeah.
Because that can be done. We've seen that be done. Just need to make sure that that's all settled and that that's not a potential like roadblock down the line. But the plan is for, regardless of what happens with the MLB draft, for him to come play football at USC. So then that is a relief too, because there was sort of an underlying, well, is all of this for naught because he's going to end up in baseball anyways. That doesn't seem like it's the intention.
Yeah.
Yeah, as Kenneth in the chat said, the Kyler Murray did that. I believe it was with the A's that he was signed with the A's, but still playing college football. So, which funnily enough is something that Lincoln Riley has experience with. So there you go. It's a Lincoln Riley connection.
Yeah. And then there's, Russell Wilson. There's that guy who probably shouldn't be named from Notre Dame. I don't know if you remember him.
Smarja?
You didn't have to say the name.
I'm sorry.
I know as a Notre Dame grad,
I've committed so many Cubs violations against you this week. So
trust me, there wasn't a happier day than 2014 when the Cubs traded him to Oakland. Yeah. It was the happiest days of my life. Anyways, let's talk about spring camp. We obviously have not been to spring camp, and spring camp is the access is not what it used to be. So one of the things that we want to go around here is take some quotes here that have been put out there in various scrums and sort of comment on them. Talk about Zach Branch a little bit. Comes to SC as a 5-star recruit, one of the top recruits in the country. At wide receiver, a position group that is just jam packed, and someone expected to contribute from jump, and he's sort of already doing that. Caleb Williams on Branch says, "Quote: Zach Branch is an explosive little dude, high energy, high effort, just trying to keep all of that and put it into one and make sure he is a complete player. He's been doing an awesome job."
Yeah, and literally every piece of media of commentary that I've seen coming out of spring camp has discussed the fact that Zach Branch looks the part, that he arrived not looking like a freshman, that he doesn't comport himself like a freshman. He is a pro, stepped right in and has already inserted himself into the wide receiver group. And that's the kind of thing you love to hear, especially about a highly touted recruit coming in who just picks up the ball and runs with it. And USC has seen freshman wide receivers who came in spring camp and got their stuff ready to go and were by the time fall camp comes around, are already just like established veterans, essentially, and go off and have incredible freshman seasons. So it is exciting to hear this kind of talk about Zach Branch. Now, everything that applied to Deuce Robinson applies to Zach Branch. It is crowded in this wide receiver group. Yeah. It is, the touches will not be easy to come by for anybody. Especially like if Relik Brown is getting looks in the slot, that's another guy that you have to contend with as far as touches that are, that they're going to try and find ways to get players involved. So there is a lot of competition, and that is exciting because that means if you see Zach Branch on the field, if you see Deuce Robinson on the field, it's because they're really, really, really good. And that is reason to be very, very excited for USC.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how all the receivers and all those different weapons sort of come to work together, work as one, and be a pretty productive source for Caleb Williams. It's, again, it's one of those things that I keep having to convince myself, SC has the returning Heisman winner. Like, that's just weird to think about. Yeah. That's who you want to pair with this kind of receiving core. This receiving core that is so insanely deep,
yeah,
the deepest receiving core that SC has ever had, which is something when SC has had so many different receiving cores, to be able to still put a qualifier like this is the blank about a USC receiving core is still nuts. And this is the deepest one. It's a big deal. Let's talk about Kion Bars, who comes over from Arizona, the defensive lineman. Who's he going up against in practice? USC's offensive line. So Justin Dietich talked about him and said, quote, Keon, man, he's a special talent. He's already made me better in these 6-7 practices. Just how strong he is, his inside hands, he's everything. Feet, he's an elite player, and he's definitely making me a lot better as a player every day.
That's what you want to hear from your center, talking about your, you know, presumptive starting nose tackle. And, you know, Kion Bars is a guy who had a really, really excellent season with Arizona a couple years ago. This past season, he wasn't quite up to that sort of flashy level. And so sort of trying to tap back into his sort of peak level as a defensive lineman. And I think that USC has to look at that as one of the key positions to take care of. And if Kion Bars is settled in that position and steps in with a physical presence and a veteran presence as well, the same way that we saw what a difference it made to have Stevie Tuikulavatu.
Mm-hmm.
Just the difference that the defensive line took just from one year without him to the next year with him,
yeah,
was incredible from front to back. So I'm not going to necessarily put like those kinds of expectations on Kion Bars, because none of us saw that coming from Stevie T. But you look at it and say the difference that a very stout nose tackle can make for a defense is enormous. And to be fair, I mean, to be honest about USC's defense, they have not had that stout sort of anchor of a nose tackle in the defense in a long time. Several years. And, you know, Stanley Taufu has stepped in and done a job for USC, but like he is not that, he is not and was never going to be that level of nose tackle like that. Yeah. I believe Stanley came in as a linebacker. Like, that's just not, he was never going to be that level of nose tackle for USC. So finding somebody who's just a bigger body in there could make a huge difference. And I think this is one of the, defensively next to the middle linebacker position, or I guess both inside linebacker positions, this is the position that I'm circling as, if USC hits on this one, that will mean significant progress for the defense.
Yeah, one of the replacements for Stevie T was going to be Brandon Peely. And he never sort of got to that level that you wanted him to be.
He was never an anchor.
Yeah, he was never the guy right there in the middle that was just going to be that anchor. And if Bars can be that guy, yeah, it definitely unlocks everything else like you talked about. It really starts from the middle and outward, goes outward. You look back at, you know, USC's best defenses of, you know, the past 2-3 decades, and it all starts up front, obviously. I know that's a cliche, but it really does. You look back at Cedric Ellis and how much Cedric Ellis factored in the middle of the Pete Carroll era and what he did for everybody else around him. So obviously if SC can get anything, a fraction of Cedric Ellis's production, you'd feel really good about the Trojans defense. Let's talk about C.R. Wright. Lincoln Riley talked about his improvement, saying, quote, he's been one of, to me, the breakout players. It sounds weird to say a breakout player for a guy that started 9 games for us last year. You don't typically say those things together, but his improvement and some of the playmaking that he's had has been substantial. The difference has been as substantial as anyone on our roster through 6 practices.
Yeah, and I want to call attention to Riley's addition to this quote about the importance of confidence for a player. It's amazing. You can take the same player, the same call, the same scheme, the same techniques, everything. And if he does all those things with confidence, the product can be 2 completely different things. And that's what we're starting to see out of him and several other guys on the defensive side of the ball. And then in turn, you start putting that together and then the whole product has a chance to play really well. That might be the most encouraging inducing quote that could possibly come out of spring camp for me, because I think it hit on something that I hadn't really put together in my head very well last fall, which was, we had a lot of conversations, you and I, about the first half of the season and the second half of the season. What happened to USC's defense? And Eric Gentry getting injured was something that we put a pin in as, is this the reason? And then he came back, obviously still hampered by his ankle injury, which he needed to ultimately have surgery on. So clearly that was not a minor thing. But like, when he came back, it didn't seem to fix the things that we thought it would fix. And I think one of the things you can point to about what changed, maybe it was Eric Gentry going out. And it was more about Eric Gentry going out and there being a step down in production. I mean, in what the defense was able to do, and thus a complete and utter lack of confidence for the defense. Because by the end of the season, that defense played scared against Tulane. That defense looked like nobody had any idea what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Uncertainty across the board, which was kind of why it was exciting to see Rajon Davis go in there. I think that was maybe the difference between Rajon Davis, like getting his shot, was just like he stepped into the game as a guy with some confidence and made a couple of hits. And like, we hadn't seen any confidence from anybody on that defense for a while. And that's maybe why it stood out. So I think that this is a really interesting quote specific to C.R. Wright. Absolutely. Because one of the narratives at the start of the season was C.R. Wright's been one of the big winners of fall camp. And look, he's going to be a starter at the start of the season, and he's really come along. And then sort of there was the letdown as things go on. But you could see that from the entire defense. The entire defense at the start of the season, they were playing fine. They weren't an elite unit by any measure, but they were a capable unit that was getting the job done, and it was getting turnovers, and they had a swagger about them. And then when the turnovers dried up in the later season, and they started giving up points and everything like that, you could see that lack of confidence really take over.
Yeah.
And I will still say it's on the coaching staff to reinstill that confidence, to figure that out, to deal with it. Absolutely. And there was a failure on that front. But the nice thing is you come back into spring and you can take that unit that was completely broken down last season and sort of rebuild them in terms of the confidence that comes with knowing what you're supposed to do. And there's this quote that I really love because I think it applies to, I feel it very distinctly in my life, but it takes twice as long to put yourself back together as it does to fall apart. You can fall apart in an instant. One bad day, one bad rep, and you can just suddenly lose your confidence and just be down in the dumps. And it takes a lot of work to pick yourself back up. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what we may have to see from this defense. They were down in the dumps and it's going to take them all offseason. It's going to take them a long time to rebuild themselves. But if we sort of view it from that perspective of that it is hard work to get yourself back up to the point where you feel confident in what you're doing, then maybe there is real hope. There is real hope for they went through all of that last year and it'll ultimately make them stronger in the coming year because maybe the understanding will be better that like this is a confidence problem, not a talent problem, not a personnel problem, which, you know, there's obviously elements of that, but like that the ultimate issue is, do you believe in yourself and your scheme?
And I think it's more than just confidence. I think that there was a lack of, you know, composure just in general. And there was pressing that we saw because of the lack of confidence, right? And because of the lack of composure and all those things. One of the key moments for me in that is the Utah game in the Pac-12 championship game. Mekhi Blackmon nearly has a huge interception late in that game. Does not get it. Goes through his hands. The very next play is the play where everybody, including Bryson Shaw especially, tries to strip the ball instead of tackle.
Yeah.
And seemingly because like the air was out of the balloon of the Mekhi Blackmon missed interception. And then, so now that I've got to step up and make up for it, and I've got to exert myself a little bit more and try to do this thing. And rather than just staying within yourself and just going out and to make the play.
And confidence plays a role in that too, because if you're confident in yourself and your teammates, the turnovers come. If you're not confident that you and your teammates can get a stop, then you have to press for the turnover because there's no other way that you're going to get a stop.
Right.
Which
is what SC had relied on, was those turnovers.
Yes. But it didn't, in the first half of the season, it didn't feel like they were going out of their way to make sure that there were X number of turnovers every day. Right. It's just the turnovers were coming. And mm-hmm. that's partly turnover luck too. But I think a lot of it is they were just doing their jobs and then the turnovers came. And I think in the second half of the season, that clearly fell apart. So just sort of hearing that a player like Sierra Wright is feeling more confident and feeling more certain, and they're seeing positive reactions from him as a result, I think you can apply that in theory to a lot of different guys on that defense who need that buildup. And part of me wonders too, like, if you're a player who this January didn't get called into the coach's office and didn't get told like, hey, you should enter the transfer portal or whatever, however that those conversations go, like maybe you do come into spring feeling a bit better. Maybe you do come into spring thinking, you know what, this staff could have processed me, and they didn't because they believe in me and they see something in me. And maybe that makes a difference too.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see what all comes of that. Of course, I guess potentially in the spring game, but realistically, in late August when SC starts the season. That's the worst part of spring camp, I think, is the tease, because you hear these things, you get excited for football, and then you're like,
yeah, but how many more months? Yeah,
none of this stuff is provable for another 5 months. So it's going to take a while. Last little thing before we move on here is Lincoln Riley talking about the rain and potentially using it to SC's advantage, saying, quote, "We've actually, even in February and early March, rescheduled some walkthroughs to the days that it did rain so that we could get out in it because you don't get to practice in the elements much. The guys know me. I'm always excited when it's going to be windy or rain or anything like that. That's a little bit of a changeup. It's a great ball handling. It's great for ball handling, great for footing. The game is just a little bit different when you get in those conditions and have to adjust. It's good for every position on the field." I think some of this is a little bit of coach speak, surely, but I think that it's a reasoned coach speak of, yeah, you want to be prepared for every little thing, and being prepared for those elements and not falling apart in those moments is a sign of being well coached, right?
Yeah, I like the approach. I like the mindset of, okay, it's raining. This is not why we come and live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
But let's make some use of it, and let's make sure that we're getting the most out of it, and let's make sure that we're taking stock of this is rainy conditions, and guess what? We're going aughts in this year. Like, maybe this is going to be a reality for us. So, you know, I think it's a good mindset. I think it's a positive spin that I appreciate as somebody who has not handled the rain in Los Angeles very well this year. So I just sort of appreciate the perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. It's big, potentially, but you know, again, you never see these things until it happens. And then we're going to overreact either way when it gets to November and it's raining, whether or not SC fumbles or they don't.
Yeah.
Which will or will not mean anything about a practice in February. So that's how things are at sports.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's talk about a conversation that I saw over on Twitter that I thought was very interesting. It's a basketball conversation, but I think we're going to steer it over to talk about football. It's about Blue Bloods. There was a tweet from Bomani Jones. Bomani Jones was asked about whether or not UConn potentially winning the basketball national championship tonight, Monday night, over San Diego State, whether or not that would let them become a blue blood, whether or not Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina, Kansas, et cetera, would let them into the club. And Bomani Jones says UConn needs to challenge Indiana to a duel. If UConn wins Monday, they'll have as many national titles as Indiana. They've been to fewer Final Fours, but more Elite Eights, which isn't something people think about, but I think it is fairly telling. Can Indiana still claim blue blood after being caught by a school like UConn? ? The blue blood discussion in college football and college basketball is tricky because that concept doesn't allow for new entries and rarely expels old ones. And he goes on to say that he doesn't think that Indiana and UCLA can trade on their past at this point, but North Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, etc. still can, for what it's worth. So this got me thinking, first of all, UConn is a blue blood as far as I'm concerned. I know that this is one of the interesting things of we consider blue bloods to be sort of like this timeless thing. But as far as the last 30 years have gone, UConn is about as consistent as literally anybody else. So, of course, they should be a blue blood. But besides that, I want to talk about this with football. Alicia, where do you stand on Blue Bloods?
I think Blue Bloods are one of those things where you just know that they are. Like, it you shouldn't have to make a list of Blue Bloods. And if you have to debate whether or not a team is a Blue Blood, then maybe they're not.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know.
West Texas Mike in the chat says no one lets someone into the Blue Blood Club. They're just there. National titles under three different coaches, potentially. I think that's an interesting thought. It's just not one era.
I think I agree with Bamani in just sort of like a, this statement boils it down to me, which it doesn't necessarily create a standard by which we'd pick a Blue Blood, but it sort of boils it down to me. The Blue Bloods are still spending old money. They can still trade on their past.
Yes.
And I think that kind of fits. It's the difference between a Blue Blood and a team that sort of like Notre Dame to me is a Blue Blood.
Yes, even though they haven't won in our lifetime.
Even though they haven't won a championship in my lifetime, they are still, like the quote says, they're still spending old money and still trading on their past.
Right.
And like someone like Oregon can't, like, even though Oregon has been 100% like one of the relevant programs of this century for sure in football, they don't have a past to trade on. That's not Oregon
They didn't compete in football until 1990.
If Oregon had five losing seasons in a row, we wouldn't talk about Oregon anymore. Right. It's the same thing. The same reason like Stanford. Stanford for the better part of a decade was a
relevant
national program.
Yeah,
they have had multiple years of losing records, and they are no longer relevant at all. Where USC could go a decade without doing crap and still be. Every single year, people are asking, why isn't USC up at the top? Where is USC? What is USC going to be doing?
And then the conversation becomes, when are they back? Right?
Yes. When, if they're asking if you are back, then
nobody's saying, is Colorado back? No. You know what I mean? Like right now, like they're arguing, is Colorado something? Is not is Colorado back? Which is sort of a way of.
I think Nebraska is an interesting case study because they too have had a long,
like they're in the Notre Dame camp.
Yeah. Where they've had a long stretch where they have not been nationally relevant, but we still look at them and think tomorrow they could be nationally relevant.
Right.
One hire away from being nationally relevant.
Yeah.
And if the hires don't work out, we are asking the question of why was that hire a failure?
Yeah. So I've put together, I think, four categories for me for this. I think the categories go from traditionally, these are the traditional Blue Bloods, which are Alabama, Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State, USC, Oklahoma, Penn State, and Nebraska. I don't think there's any, there is no debate. Those are Blue Bloods. Everyone agrees that those are Blue Bloods. Those schools know that they're Blue Bloods, and everyone else around them knows that they're Blue Bloods. They just are Blue Bloods. To Malcolm's point in the chat, like, you can't become a Blue Blood. Like that category is just, yes, we all just know that they're Blue Bloods. We just grew up knowing that they're Blue Bloods. They just are, right?
Yeah.
Those nine schools just are Blue Bloods. So that's traditionally, those are Blue Bloods. Realistically, I think there is a second tier, which these are schools that are realistically Blue Bloods, but not technically. And I think that not everyone agrees that they are Blue Bloods. Some people think that they are. Some people don't. These schools absolutely think they are Blue Bloods, by the way, from their own perspective.
Yes.
They act like Blue Bloods in reality, but they are still not technically Blue Bloods because they weren't born as Blue Bloods. This is Texas, LSU, Georgia, Florida, Florida State, Clemson, now in that category, and Miami. And Miami is even the question mark of that one, but I'm keeping Miami there. Like, those, realistically, those are blue bloods in terms of what we talk about, what blue bloods are and what blue bloods do. They're in that category, but they're not, like, they're not made blue bloods. Like, no one's pricked their finger with a needle. You know what I mean? They haven't become like true blue blood. Like, I'm sorry, Texas is not a true blue blood. They took 40 years between national championships between 68 and 2006. Like, and
see, but why does that apply to Texas and not Notre Dame?
Because I think the difference is that Notre Dame has, to go back to West Texas Mike's point, Notre Dame has so many different coaches that were nationally relevant, whereas Texas doesn't have those eras. Why is Texas a blue blood? Because people think that Texas is important in football.
Yeah.
But you can't mention any team of notes about Texas except for the 60s and the 2000s. You know what I mean? Like, and it's the same thing with Miami. Like, Miami in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s were arguably the best program in America. But like before that and after that, they're not there. So that means that they're realistically, they could argue that they're a blue blood, but they're not actually a blue blood. They're not really a blue blood. Florida State is not really a blue blood. So you can put them in the realistically act like blue blood category, but they're not technically a blue blood. They're not traditionally a blue blood. So the third tier for me is the practically. These are practically, like, these are programs that spend money. These are programs that have big brands. These are programs that are nationally relevant. These are programs that conferences go out and seek to add them to their list. These are programs that their fans might think that they're blue bloods, but they're not blue bloods. Nobody else thinks that they're blue bloods. But they are just nationally relevant, and they're always going to be brands with the upward trajectory of getting onto that level of Texas and LSU. This is Oregon. This is Washington, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Texas A&M, and Auburn. These are not blue bloods. These are nationally relevant brands, but they're not blue bloods. That's the practical sense of, like, They're relevant, but they're not actually blue bloods. And then you get to the fourth tier for me, which is the step under that. These are the guys who used to be like that. Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, Syracuse, Colorado, UCLA, Pitt. And for laughs, we'll throw in Princeton. Like, these were the schools that used to be realistically blue bloods. They used to be practically blue bloods. They used to be, maybe in Princeton's case, traditionally a blue blood. But they surely aren't anymore because, again, they're not really blue bloods, so they never stuck and they never got unevictable. They never followed through like LSU and Georgia to actually win multiple titles and stick there or anything like that. They fell off. They're no longer nationally relevant. So those are my tiers.
I think that those tiers work, especially with like what West Texas Mike put in the chat from Dave Woods, the Podcast of Champions, who said, how quickly is a team able to rebound and compete for championships once they get the right coach? I think that's a good point, especially when you look at like the formerly blue bloods category. Like,
yeah,
if Georgia Tech got the right coach today,
it would still take them a while.
To get back to being year to year nationally relevant.
Yes.
If
Florida got the right coach, they'd be in the discussion in 2 years.
Yeah.
If SC got the right coach, they'd be in the discussion from day one.
Well, we literally just saw that happen.
Yes. Right. Right.
But I think all of these categories, these tiers, as it were, I think they're a good way to categorize. I still think there's going to be debate. I think Texas fans would certainly have their argument for being a full-blown blue blood. I think Georgia and LSU fans would fight the good fight and try to convince you that they're a blue blood.
Yes.
All of those teams are certainly could make their case.
But just
because
they meet the criteria doesn't mean that they are.
Yes.
That's the thing.
And that's why it's so difficult, because it's why what we went back to what I, where we started this conversation from my perspective. You either are or you aren't, and we just sort of know what is. Yeah. Like, it's there's a feel to it.
Yeah,
and
there's only eight that actually are.
Yeah.
The rest are sort of pretending that they are or hoping that they could be, but there's only eight that actually are. And to go back to a thing that my dad always talks about.
Even the eight that you list there,
yeah,
only six of those eight are, would I like stake my life.
You would put Penn State and Nebraska in the second tier?
No, I personally wouldn't. But I wouldn't stake my life on them being, if we did a national poll tomorrow and you had to have 75% of the population who agrees that you are a blue blood or else I die. Like, I feel very confident with those top six.
SC, Notre Dame, Michigan, Ohio State.
If I said to stake my life on programs that would absolutely be voted with 85% of the vote, would go towards these programs being blue bloods.
Yeah.
I would stake my life on those. And I guess that's kind of the point is,
yeah,
like those are the blue bloods because no one's going to argue. No one's going to argue.
Yeah. I will hear you put Penn State and Nebraska into the Texas, Georgia, Florida, LSU camp. I will hear
because
that.
I think you could do Penn State, Nebraska, in the top. You could toss Texas in one or the other. Like you could, right. You can play around with some of these, with some of these categories, but when it comes down to it, the top six in that top category, you don't play around with where they sit.
The reason I didn't put them, I put Penn State, Nebraska into that blue blood, traditional blue blood category is because of the old money thing.
Yeah.
Like they are selling the old money. Well, again, Penn State goes back to the 60s. Nebraska goes back to the, you know, 50s and the 60s. Like
Nebraska has been not just like not relevant, but like actively bad
for the last 20 years.
For most of my college football fandom. And yet still every single season, my ears prick up when a discussion of is this Nebraska's time?
First of all, it's sad. It's very sad to me. Kills me. You didn't experience Nebraska being good. Nebraska being good was freaking fun. Yeah, it was so fun. It was so fun fearing Nebraska. Yeah. I remember when ASU beat them in Tempe, like that was like mind blowing that happened. The Colorado game in 2001, where Colorado beat them 62-36, Chris Brown ran all over them. That was earth shattering. That was like, remember where you were at this moment because Nebraska was getting their ass kicked. And to think that we don't care now if they lose to, say, Troy is wild.
But that's my thing is, I don't think we don't care. Sorry for the double negative. But like, as someone who's in sports media, like, we pay attention to Nebraska.
Yes.
That's sort of the point.
Right. And Cam says, just for argument's sake, SC didn't win in the 80s and 90s, won Rose Bowl, no natties, and nothing in the 2010s, won Rose Bowl. Yeah, and you know, you can also make the argument that if it wasn't for the Pete Carroll era, then SC has been 0 for the last 50 years. But the Pete Carroll era did exist, and the Pete Carroll era was a big, nether dominant decade. And I think that SC's troubles has not been reaching SC's troubles has been being consistent for decade after decade after decade, in the sense that, because obviously SC went to the Rose Bowl under every single president up until
Trump. Trump was the first president who didn't see USC in a Rose Bowl.
Yeah, which is mind blowing. But and that talks about the consistency that SC ever had, right? But at the same point, and to what Cam is saying here, like, SC was dominant in the 20s and the 30s. They were dominant in the 60s and the 70s, and they were dominant in the aughts. But between them, there, SC was just in the practical category, right? Which is with the Oregons, the Washingtons, the Wisconsins, the Michigan States, the Auburns. SC was on that level in those other decades, which I think only further iterates how much of a blue blood they are, that when they were bad, SC was on the level of where Oregon and Washington and Michigan State are now, right? Like, that's what bad USC is. We talk about SC having a bad decade in the 2010s. They were still
They still have more Rose Bowl wins than the vast majority of the Pac-12.
ASU would have killed for that era. UCLA would have killed for that era in the 2010s, which is weird. It's weird to say, but it's how it was. The 90s were bad for USC, but it doesn't mean they were nationally bad. So, What's your thoughts? We've heard from the chat. Send us your email if you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, or send us a tweet over on Twitter or Facebook or wherever you want to do. Reach out to us as well. So let's wrap up this episode with getting over to the mailbag.
You've got mail.
Let's go to a message we got from Cameron. How in love is Alicia over the tight ends now that Deuce Robinson is committed to USC?
I'm very happy. I'm very excited. I am also, I don't know if you guys could tell, I'm also just like trying to contain my expectations because I've put my hope in so many tight ends over the last few years. And I've come away with a lot of disappointment a lot of the time. So like, I'm just trying not to, end up with a situation where I've staked my tight end hope on one dude and then things go wrong.
Wait, hold on. Which button am I supposed to press here?
He makes me drool?
I don't have that one.
Oh.
No, I'm saying, is it this one?
I actually think this is a case of optimistic Alicia.
Because that's what it should be because of the tight end stuff. But you saying that you don't want to get your heart broken again sounds like...
Pessimistic Alicia is out in full force.
Yeah.
No, it's not that I'm pessimistic. I'm just like, I'm just trying not to get hurt again. I am.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. But I'm equally, like, I'm also excited about Lake McCree. Like, I really, really enjoyed watching Lake McCree play football.
Yeah.
When he was able to do so. So, you know, as I've said in the past, like, when we talk about me loving tight ends, like, my enjoyment of Drake London was 50% like this is a wide receiver who's playing like a tight end. So right. Like I've had that itch scratched by sort of finding the wiggle room in the tight end discussion. But you know, there's just something about like a 6'6", 250 pound dude. And he's not 250 pounds right now, but like you could imagine him once he gets in a college weight room, like putting on weight and, you know, 6'6", 235 running around on a football field is just nothing like it.
Yeah. Always wondered, like, if Aussies came to play football at the peak of their powers, I think they'd be a bunch of tight ends.
Yeah.
Like when you talk about like Ben Griffiths was like 6'6" and built that way.
Yeah.
Because Aussie rules football is basically like just tight ends running all over the field like wide receivers jumping up and catching balls.
Yeah.
And that would be fun. So, all right. We're going to wrap up the pod there. It's time, just about time for a tip off over in the national championship game. So we're going to go over and watch that. So let us know what you guys think about Deuce Robinson. What you guys think about Blue Bloods and spring camp and all of that here in the comments over on YouTube. Send us your emails, randoptroy@fanside.com, sound off on social media as well. We always appreciate you guys. Join us here on YouTube next week, 5 p.m. Pacific. We'll be back with another episode. And if you join our membership, you can join and see our members-only content, including last week's episode. Where we talked about things like uniforms, Lincoln Riley, and where he ranks as a Pac-12 coach, whether or not he is number one, and so much more. So, as always, we will see you next time. See ya.
Yeah, see ya. Also, sorry, Jessie's in the room right now. She decided to lay down right there.
Yeah, she's off camera. She's not visible.
If you go watch the bonus episode, if you become a member and go watch the bonus episode, this couch right over my shoulder, she spent most of that episode just chilling in that couch. So some Jesse, Jesse to tempt you to come over to be a subscriber.
Yeah, absolutely. There you go. Until next time, we will see
you.
See ya.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.